Coming up in this podcast, Woodside Projects, Heath Development, Navitas, Rising Philanthropy, and our special report on WA's biggest deals and deal makers.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News, with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Welcome to our weekly podcast, and welcome Mark Beyer. Woodside had a good quarter, but more importantly, it's pretty gung-ho on its project portfolio.
Yeah, we had another update during the week. More contracts awarded, this time for the Scarborough gas project. So it's been really interesting to see this increasing momentum in these projects that Woodside is working on. So Scarborough is a big gas field off the Pilbara coast. It's been known of for many years. Woodside acquired a 75% stake in the project. And now they've awarded some contracts for some front-end engineering work. And what's interesting here is that they're funding that work on their own. BHP has a 25% stake in the project, but they're not chipping in any money at this point in time. So lots of speculation around that, whether or not BHP is keen to stay in for the long term. They say they are, but at this point not spending money, whereas Woodside is prepared to fork out the dollars.
And forgive me for my ignorance here, but what typically happens if people don't pay for their share?
Well, look, this is quite an unusual circumstance, I would have thought, for a big joint venture of this kind. I mean, typically, each joint venture party puts in their contribution. Clearly, in this case, there's agreement between the parties that they'll proceed on this basis. So yep. It's not as though BHP is foregoing any contractual rights. To me, it's just more of a signal about, you know, Woodside is keen to push ahead with some very big developments off the northwest coast. The Scarborough gas is earmarked for the Pluto LNG plant. Woodside, in fact, is planning to build a second production line at Pluto. So collectively, it's about a $15 billion project. And then on top of that, there's also plans for the Browse gas fields, which they also want to develop. Underpins some of this sort of positive view that we have about the future of the state and some very large developments getting underway up in the north, on top of all the mining developments that we've spoken about separately.
And it's an active, this is a very active period in Peter Coleman's tenure then.
Yeah, I mean, look, he came in after, listeners might recall Don Volte. He was the chief executive at Woodside for quite a few years. And that was during those boom years. And he was very gung-ho, very enthusiastic about getting up as many developments as he possibly could. And then when Peter Coleman joined, it was a very marked change of tone. He was sort of very measured, very considered in everything he said, very methodical in his approach, reflecting his background at Exxon. And yet after these years of not doing very much development, Woodside is now seeing an opportunity in the market. They're looking at the global supply-demand situation, and most people are saying the world is going to need more LNG in coming years. And whether or not, or for how long that is sustained, is always a big question. And there are lots of other developments around the world, lots of gas projects in the US, in Qatar, in Africa, many places are proceeding with new LNG projects. Canada is doing some as well. It's a highly competitive market, but certainly Woodside, they spotted an opportunity and they want to get more development, partly to, as I say, to expand Pluto, but also about ensuring the long-term supply of gas into the existing LNG plants they've got at Karratha for the Northwest Shelf.
Yeah, okay.
No, so it's enough. A really fascinating dynamic there.
Yep.
I guess the other thing that's changed up in the Northwest is that traditionally you had companies like Woodside and Chevron and Shell each pushing their own barrows and their own projects. But one of the things that we're looking at now is that Chevron has the big Clio gas field. They're now saying that they might develop that gas and pump it into the Northwest Shelf LNG plant operated by Woodside. So lots of sort of shifting sort of alliances, if you like. People just finding the most pragmatic way to get ahead.
Right, yeah. Do the best with the assets they've got. Now, during the week, Mark, there was an adverse court ruling against, well, I think it was against Colin Heath and one of his private company. He's the boss of land developer Heath Development Co. It sounds like a pretty complex story there.
Complex, but very interesting, and one that has some real lessons for many other people who might have long-running business partnerships. Now, Colin Heath and his company, Heath Development Co., they've been one of the more significant land developers across Perth and indeed down in the southwest over many years.
Yeah.
And most of their projects were in partnership with a couple of brothers, Bill and Bob Gadecki. They came out of a dairy farming family many years ago. Heath was a partner in these projects. Colin Heath was a director of their private companies. And Heath Development Co. was also providing services to the projects and was getting paid fees, in many cases up to 10% of the gross sale proceeds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what changed? Bob Gadecki passed away about 7 years ago. His children started having a look at the structure that was in place and they said, well, you know, we're not sure about this. Why are all these fees being paid to this external party and is there a proper contractual basis for it? Now, Colin Heath said, we've been doing this since the year dot. You know, we all have an understanding. We've had agreements in place. We've had discussions. This is the way it's always worked. The court had a closer look at it and they said, well, we don't agree. We don't believe there's a proper contractual basis for these fees that you've been getting paid all these years. So they found that he breached his fiduciary duties and he's now been ordered to pay back several million dollars in fees.
So there's a possibility there was a verbal agreement there, but it wasn't documented.
Well, I mean, this was the detail of the case.
I mean, that's what he said, right? There was a verbal agreement, and or he believed that that's how it was.
Yes,
presumably on the basis of an agreement with his now deceased partner.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, well, one of the brothers, Bill Gadecki, he's 84 or thereabouts. He's still alive, and in fact, he was supportive of Colin Heath.
Hmm.
But it was the two children, you know, the next generation, who looked at it with a very different prism.
Mm.
And the court made quite a clear ruling. They said...
Kind of fascinating, isn't it? You think about all these times where, and we have it even in our business, where you go to someone, you're doing something, and you say, look, we want that in writing. And it's almost like a negative thing. Well, why do you want that? You know, can't we just do business on this basis? But in fact, there is a good reason for putting it in writing.
Mm. And in fact, in the judgment... Justice Paul Tottle said he accepted that Colin Heath believed he was entitled to these payments.
Mm.
But there wasn't a contractual basis that stood up to the glare of
or any of evidence, current scrutiny. Any evidence of such a... Yeah, okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Wow. So, I imagine there are many other people who may have these sorts of arrangements in place, that they've just been doing things a certain way for a long period of time. And if circumstances were to change, as they did in this case, when one of the founders passed away, maybe people need to go away and check the basis upon which they're operating.
Yep.
If they have some sort of partnership or agreement in place, and just make sure that it's going to stand up.
Well, of course, the famous one is Stan Perrin and Toyota, isn't it? That Stan Perrin had the Toyota franchise here. But it was all done on a handshake, and then, I think it was, 15 or 20 years ago when Stan was getting old then, the family and Stan and his advisors said, you've got to go and, get it written down, otherwise, a handshake may not last the after the founder dies.
That's a great example, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, Stan lived on for 20 years, but, it still made sense. Now, Mark, you've done some research on the big end of WA philanthropy, and there's been a big rise in assets over the past year.
Yep, and look, interesting you mentioned Stan Perrin in this context, because he's one of the people, or his charitable trust is one of the ones I've looked at. So, look, the trigger for doing this was that the Mindaroo Foundation, which is, of course, headed up by Andrew and Nicola Forrest, they put out their annual report earlier this month. They've made a whopping $402 million of donations last financial year. Yeah. So it's just quite a phenomenal amount of money going into this philanthropic foundation.
Yep.
So currently sitting on assets of about $640 million. Hmm. So, you know, augurs well for future philanthropy in this state that amount of money is sitting there available for grants in future. But then I went away and had a closer look. I mean, this is part of the research we do for our BNIQ search engine.
Yep.
So people can go onto our website, click on the BNIQ tab, and they'll find a list of all the philanthropic foundations in Western Australia. One of them is the McCusker Charitable Foundation. Now, Malcolm McCusker has been well known as a generous philanthropist over many years, but until about 18 months ago, he never had a formal structure. So he actually went away and officially registered a charitable trust and put in quietly $100 million. Mm. So that was once again to ensure the longevity of this charitable foundation, that when he passes away, it will continue in perpetuity. Well, sorry, for a long time. Another one, of course, Stan Perrin, when he passed away, his charitable trust has never had a lot of assets, but it's never had a shortage of money coming in either. He pledged the greater majority of his group's assets, you know, about $4 billion,
uh-huh.
and its annual profits, about $300 million, to his charitable trust. So, you know, that will transform, or has the potential to transform, philanthropy in this state.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, that's now run by his daughter, Elizabeth Perrin. And then the fourth interesting example that I looked at was Gina Reinhart. Now, she's not someone that publicises her philanthropy, but it's well known that she's put a lot of money into Olympic sports in particular, things like swimming.
Especially, yeah.
You know, millions of dollars over the years, a lot of money into breast cancer research and a whole range of other things. But she's never actually publicised how much, in contrast to, say, Mindaroo, where it's quite well known and quite public now, what the Forrest family does. But the fascinating thing, there is an entity called the Reinhart Family Medical Foundation. Now, what was extraordinary there, Gina Reinhart put $175 million into this foundation, earmarked for a hospital to be built in Darwin. Now, after a change of government, and it became clear that the current government in the Northern Territory didn't support this development,
right,
they gave the money back to her.
Right.
So, quite bizarre. You know, the Reinhart family do things differently. And so this was, but nonetheless, even after that refund, there's still $73 million sitting in the Reinhart Family Medical Foundation.
Yeah, right.
So,
quite a lot.
You know, that's a lot of money. So, you know, several fascinating examples there of very wealthy Western Australian families putting aside big licks of money for philanthropy.
Yeah, and it's a great story and great research, Mark. Now, Mark, the board of Navitas is back to hire a bid from BGH Capital. Now, that was already supported by Navitas founder Rod Jones, and there's been quite a bit of a takeover battle there, hasn't there? So, you know, what are we seeing now? This is the end of it?
Yeah, well, it looks that way, yeah. I mean, this has been a really fascinating series of developments. So, of course, Navitas is an education services company, primarily looking after international students going into universities and running pathway programs for them. But they've diversified a lot. They've grown internationally. You know, a great WA success story. And Rod Jones was a co-founder and ran the business until a year or so ago. He grew to a point where he wasn't comfortable with it as a listed company, and clearly he wasn't supportive of some of the things that the current board was doing. So he's joined this consortium with BGH Capital, along with Australian Super. Yeah, they put forward a proposal last year, which valued the company at just under $2 billion, and the board said, not good enough. And that led to quite a hostile situation. I mean, the chair, Tracy Horton, came under extraordinary pressure at the annual meeting last year because Rod Jones, he's still a shareholder, BGH has got a stake, and a lot of other long-running investors in the business are really there firmly behind Rod Jones.
Yeah.
So Tracy Horton was re-elected as chair by the skin of her teeth at the AGM late last year. And if she hadn't been re-elected, I mean, I can't imagine, or I can't recall another occasion where that would have happened.
Mm.
But hats off to the incumbent board. You know, they stuck to their guns and they went back to this consortium and said, well, look, if you're serious about this, come back to us with a better proposal. They've now done that. The new proposal values the business at $2.1 billion. So, you know, there's a great measure of value created by a Perth business.
Yeah. And they're going to return. I mean, I gather there's a bit of part of it is they want to return back to the kind of the core strategy. Is that right?
Yeah, look, they haven't really gone into a lot of detail about what their future plans are. I had a brief chat to Rod Jones during the week, and the point he wanted to emphasise was that it wasn't just about money. I mean, the irony of this is that private equity groups like BGH Capital, you know, they've got their reputation. They're the people that come in and rape and pillage.
Yeah.
You know, they'll buy a struggling business, turn it around and flog it off a few years later.
Yeah, saddled with debt.
Well, often that's the case. But Rod sort of insists that BGH has a long-term view, which is, you know, certainly different from what the way private equity often operates, and that they've got the right focus. They've got a focus on the students and the long-term development of the business.
Right.
So,
whereas potentially ASX has an ASX listed company has a shorter term.
Well, that's right. And yet, you know, he ran it for many years as a listed company.
Yeah.
And was generally well regarded. You know, one thing that was noticeable was that, you know, they've got many contracts with universities and other organisations around the world. Lose one contract. I think it was Macquarie University. Yeah. They lost a contract. It was a famous case, and they got absolutely hammered by the market.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So, you know, as we know, stock market, like any market, they tend to overreact both on the upside and the downside.
Mm.
But look, I think this is this takeover play has just about panned out. There's still some due diligence to be run through, but it looks like Navitas will be returning to a private company.
Yeah.
Another observation Rod Jones made to me, he said he's not planning to go back as chief executive. He intends to be a non-executive director, but emphasised that he doesn't want to go back and run it again. And look, he's in his 70s, he's not a young man. But presumably we'll be looking carefully at who the next chief executive will be.
Okay, well, we'll follow that with interest. Now, our special report this week is a review of the past year in corporate finance. What are the key themes there?
Yep, and look, Navitas was one example of one of several very large takeover deals that unfolded during the course of, 2018 and early 2019. So look, along with our research team, we've gathered together a huge amount of data, once again, all available on our BNIQ search engine. Look, just in 2018, there was about 800 transactions mm-hmm. that sit in our database worth $51 billion. So, you know, there's things going on out there.
Yeah.
Now, as always, these things can get distorted by a handful of big transactions. So, you know, Wesfarmers is demerging Coles. That was the biggest transaction for the year. The takeover of Quadrant Energy was another big one. One of the themes that we're seeing here, and it's not the first time we've had this, but you've got a handful of big global players, people like Goldman Sachs, UBS, even Macquarie Capital. They tend to dominate the big transactions. But then below that, there's another tier where there's the local advisory outfits who capture, you know, a lot of the smaller end of the market. Now, occasionally, you'll get a group like an Azure Capital that actually moves up the league, if you like,
yep.
and starts doing some of the bigger end of town. You know, they're a key advisor to IINet, for example. But the pattern that emerged very much in 2018 was, you know, the big transactions were handled by the global players, And, you know, as I say, Goldman Sachs and Macquarie Capital were the two big advisors. But below that, you had people like Sternship Advisors. Now, that's the outfit set up by Tim Day, who in fact left UBS. So he's got his little outfit up there in West Perth.
Yep.
They were very active in the market. People like Hartleys, PCF Capital, Euroz, Azure Capital. You know, they all had a decent deal flow, but not very big transactions.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is looking at the law firms. Now, the one that sat head and shoulders above the others this year, Herbert Smith Freehills, biggest law firm in town, a big network, strong relationships into the Perth business community. So they can do both.
And a global operator too.
And a global operator. So they had a good year. Gilbert and Tobin were very active in the market. Steiner Price Paganin, Bellenhaus Lawyers. So, you know, people that want to see who's who in the market, you can delve into all the data that we've got and just see which transactions people are working on and who's got the market share.
And what was the trend, Mark? Are we seeing a growth in, are we seeing more transactions at a higher number, or was that tailing off a bit towards the end of the year?
I think the overall tone is that there's not a lot of, it's not a busy market.
Yeah.
And I think the area that fluctuates a lot too is on the capital raising side. You know, there's not a lot of capital raising activity going on at the moment.
No.
And the transactions that are happening tend to be at the smaller end.
Yep.
I mean, look, you know, Woodside did a very large capital raising last year, but that's sort of that was, if you like, the one exception.
Yep.
If you take that sort of one big deal out, the value of total deals would fall right away.
Gotcha.
So for the local stockbrokers, it's a relatively quiet market, and similarly on the takeover front.
And did you get any feeling, the year ahead from
those? Look, I think that there's a sense that we're seeing this pick up in the mining space and in mining projects. And off the back of that, we should see opportunities for all the contracting firms and the service providers.
Yep.
And so some of them, we've already seen some mergers in that space. Ausdrill and Barminco merged, for example.
Good example.
SRG did a merger. So these are players that are coming together with a competitor to become a larger, stronger operator and hopefully get more market share. And so there's a sense that a more buoyant market could actually trigger more takeover activity.
Yeah, okay.
But look, there's also some other things in here. I attended a panel discussion about the tech sector and about opportunities for tech startups and early stage tech companies to raise money. It was almost schizophrenic. There are some people who still bemoan the lack of big venture capital funds in Perth, but quite a few others in the room who personally I tend to agree with, saying, look, if you're a good business, you've got a good business plan, there's money out there.
Plenty of money there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we spoke to about 10 people who participated in that panel discussion. So if you're in that zone, if you're at a very early stage startup, you're looking for an angel investor. There were some people at the panel who said, we're out there. Perth Angels, for instance, that's a group, Perth Angels. They're out there looking for businesses to invest in. And they said, we actually sometimes struggle. People don't know about us.
Yeah.
So there are people out there with money. 808 Ventures, that's a new, about a year old now, a venture capital group based in Perth. They've done about, I think, 8 or 9 deals. Only one of them's in Perth. They'd love to invest more money here, but they haven't found the investments.
Oh, well, maybe there's someone listening.
Well, I'm sure there are. So, have a read, see the names there. If you're in that space, there are people out there that would love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Mark. That's fantastic. Our podcast is now on Spotify and, of course, SoundCloud. Why not add it to your subscriptions if you haven't already and help us grow from 47,000 listens last year? Perhaps you'd like to sponsor this podcast. Give our sales and marketing team a call on 9288 2100 if you think you have a product or service our audience should know about. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.